Federal judges who reinstated a Wisconsin photo ID law to vote changed the rules for the November 4th election. In 2011, when the photo ID law was first passed, it was challenged both in state court and federal court. I'm so grateful that Ken Meyer, who testified in state court in that challenge, is here to talk about, well, just the whole dimensions of this pretty intriguing development. I mean, federal court judges order 56, 57 days away from the November 4 election, photo ID requirement. We have a pretty amazing set of circumstances here, don't we, Professor?
We do, and what's likely to happen is that the election is going to be conducted with a good deal of confusion. Maybe chaos may be too strong a word, but my guess is that there are going to be many thousands of people who show up on election day expecting to be able to cast a ballot who will not have the documents necessary to establish their ability to cast a ballot.
Well, I'm so glad you came here because, as I said, you testified in the state trial.
Correct.
And you were asked to estimate the number of Wisconsin residents who don't have an acceptable form of photo ID. And the number is?
The number was roughly 330,000. And that was my estimate of not only the number of registered voters who we can identify through the SVRS, the statewide voter registration list, and compare that to the data maintained by the Department of Transportation, and so we can match up, see which registered voters show up as having either a driver's license or a photo ID. Now, there are other forms of qualifying ID.
Yes.
You can have a passport. You can have a recently issued naturalization document with your picture on it.
Tribal ID.
Tribal ID.
Form of military.
Military ID and certain types of student IDs if it has a signature and an expiration date. And I went through a process to, the key is how many people without a driver's license or a photo ID, which is by far going to be the type of identification that people would use to establish their qualifications. I came up with an estimate of a total of about 331,000 otherwise qualified voters, people who are over 18, citizens, and that's roughly consistent with estimates that were derived in the federal trial of roughly 300,000.
And this is 330,000 of a voting age population of what?
Wisconsin.
Okay, but is that one in five adults may not have an acceptable photo
ID?
Well,
as a percentage, it's about 9%.
9%, and so one in 11.
Right, and what's interesting is that this method of doing the match between the registered voters and the driver's license and photo ID has been conducted in a number of states. It's been done in Florida, Georgia, Texas, Pennsylvania, and all of the estimates of the percentage of people who don't have one of these forms of identification is they're all consistent. Roughly between 6% or 10% of registered voters don't show up as having a driver's license or a state-issued photo ID.
Has any other state had a 56 or 57 day gun to its head to implement a photo ID mandate?
Well, not that I'm aware of. And the difficulty here is that the law had been enjoined since early in 2012.
Yes.
When in state court, the district court judge issued an injunction and then issued a permanent injunction. And then there was a separate federal trial. And the issues were different. In the state trial, it was a straightforward voting Wisconsin constitutional right to vote and looking at the need to have one of these identifications as an additional qualification that was prohibited by the Constitution. Federal court was a challenge under the Voting Rights Act.
Yes.
And the argument there was that the identification requirement imposed a disproportionate burden on minorities, particularly African Americans and Latinos who are covered populations under the Voting Rights Act. And so the types of arguments that were made in the two trials were somewhat different, but the overall estimate of the number of people who lacked an identification was about the same. It was about 9%.
9%. Well, let's talk about, can you estimate, based on your research and other data, who these 331,000 are? Can we first talk about gender, more male, more female than male? What do you think?
Well, it's difficult to say because that's not something that I did in the trial that I testified in, and I'm not aware that argument came up in the federal trial. We can draw some rough inferences. There are more women make up a slight majority of the registered voting population, and they vote at slightly higher levels than men, 52-53%. So in that regard, it seems, well, you can't really draw an inference from that, but we also know that women live longer than men. And one of the things that we do know is that the older you are, once you reach about 65, the older you are, you're actually less likely to have a form of identification. Older people tend not to drive, and so the percentage of people who don't show up as having a driver's license or photo ID is probably a little bit higher among elderly women. On the other hand, there are some exceptions to the Voter ID Act. If you are confined in a nursing home, you are able to vote without mm-hmm. an ID as long as it's certified by an election registrar. That's the wrong phrase, but you can have your absentee ballot certified without having an ID. But that's really any firm numbers would be speculation.
Okay.
It's probably a little higher, but it's hard to say by how much.
Is it also a pretty inexact science to ask about the race of these 331,000?
Well, yes and no. It's not possible to come up with a precise estimate, because although the driver's license data does record the race of the holder, it's recorded on the driver's license, Wisconsin does not record the race of a registered voter, because we are not a Section 5 Voting Rights Act state,
right.
Unlike states in the South,
yes.
Georgia, Florida, Texas, where that is recorded. We don't record that. But there are a couple of ways to get some rough estimates, and one is by looking at the variation in the percentage of people who don't match, who don't have a form of ID by county, because mm-hmm. we know the address. And it's not surprising that the number of people who, the percentage of non-matches, in particular Milwaukee County, which is the highest population of African Americans and Latinos in the state,
yes.
is significantly higher than it is statewide. It's about 12.5% don't show up as having a match, as opposed to 9% statewide.
So, okay, now I want to be sure I understand that. Your data suggests 12.5% of voting age population in Milwaukee County may, and that's a conditional word, may not have a photo ID.
Correct? That's correct.
Okay.
Now we can't observe their race directly. Now in the federal trial, which did involve direct arguments about the effect on race, is that one of the experts in that case actually did go through a process where he estimated, and there are ways of doing it demographically, looking at where people live, looking at the surnames and so forth, that you can come up with fairly precise probabilistic estimates of the percentage of different racial groups. And he estimated, I can't remember the precise numbers, but he estimated that it was about 11.5% of African Americans.
11.5% African Americans.
And 19% of Hispanics.
Ooh.
And 12% of
Asians
did not have, as opposed to about a 9% statewide.
This is testimony from the federal trial.
Correct.
Okay. What about income? Is that possible? I realize I'm asking some precise questions in a very inexact.
There was a study done by a professor at UW-Milwaukee, John Poisserat, and he did look at the distribution of non-matches based on census block. And then we do have good information about median incomes or incomes based on census locations. And he found that, not surprisingly, in areas of lower income, higher concentrations of poverty, you had more people who didn't have a driver's license. In part, if you don't have a car or access
right.
to a car, there's no real need to have a driver's license. And one of the things that we know, and it often gets lost, is that most people look at the driver's license requirement and say, what's the big deal? Everybody's got a driver's license.
Right.
I have a driver's license. I have to show it to everywhere. I have to show it to get into a federal building. I have to show it when I cash a check or deposit money in the bank. How get on an airplane? How can anybody survive without a driver's license? And what that misses is that there are a lot of people who are really living marginally, mm-hmm. who are, not surprisingly, more likely to be poor, to not have a stable address. And for there are people who manage to, or not manage to, they have to go through life. They don't have an ID. They don't cash checks. They don't drive. They don't go to federal buildings. And what's a little distressing is that I think there's a profound lack of empathy because people look at this and they think, well, I have a driver's license. It's not a big deal. But that neglects the reality that for a lot of people, and these are people who are living at the margins, they're poor, they have chaotic lives, they are less likely to need one of these forms of ID. And there are a lot of ways that people can get connected with the services that they need without a photo ID, social security number, or some other form of identification that for the purposes of, for example, getting certain social services that don't require a driver's license. And it gets difficult to sort through precisely what and where. But the reality is that every state that has had this kind of analysis done, the numbers are consistent. Between 6% and 10% of registered voters show up as not having a driver's license or a photo ID. And that's the reality.
Well, you've heard and I've heard the claims by Democrats saying this photo ID requirement it most hurts their voters. Is it that easy?
In fact, it's probably true, and it's not going to be true 100% of the time because there are going to be a lot of rural voters that are likely to vote Republican. But if you look at the covariates, some of the things that help determine whether you can predict someone's vote, and you know, African Americans, the poor, marginalized, Latinos. These are constituencies, demographic groups that are more likely to vote Democratic. Not 100%, but certainly more potential Democratic votes are likely to be prevented than potential Republican votes.
On Friday, I did an interview with a Wisconsin Department of Transportation official who's overseeing the process of issuing photo IDs. And he said WSDOT has issued 292,000 photo IDs since July of 2011 after the law was passed. Now, your estimate is 331,000 don't have it. Do you think some of these 331 are numbered among the 292,000 that Department of Transportation number of photo IDs DOT says they've issued?
It's possible. But what we don't know is over a three-year period, the Department of Transportation is going to be issuing hundreds of thousands of photo IDs irrespective of whether people are getting them for voting or not. And so what we would need to know is how many of these were people who previously did not have a photo ID.
That's a good question.
How many of them came from other states?
Yes.
How many of them got a photo ID that they otherwise would not have? For example, not everyone who gets a photo ID is 18 years old. That it's not a huge percentage, but there are people, children, who get a photo ID. So that number, it would be a serious mistake to look at that number and say that, well, that's roughly equivalent to the 300,000 problem solved, because it's almost certainly not the case.
Our state Supreme Court, when it approved our photo ID law, said, but you cannot charge for them, because that amounts to my term a poll tax. And the Court of Appeals made reference to the fact that these photo IDs are free. Do you think that concession that you can get a photo ID for free is a major factor in getting some of these potential voters who don't have photo IDs, getting them IDs between now and November 4?
For some, possibly. But the real problem is that for a lot of people without a voter ID, with an existing ID, they don't have the underlying documents. They don't have a birth certificate. They don't have
Social Security?
A passport. They have a Social Security number, but that does not suffice. You cannot go to the DOT and say, here's my Social Security card, because that doesn't establish your identity. And one of the issues is that these underlying documents cost money. $20 typically for a birth certificate. There's also an issue about access to the Department of Transportation, because in a number of counties in Wisconsin, the DMVs are not open 7 days a week. Some of them are open just a few days a week. Some of them are remote, not accessible by public transportation. And so there are two issues. There are a certain number of people who fundamentally do not have access to the underlying documents necessary to establish their identity. There are other people who could get access to that, but it might cost money that they don't have. Or even if they were able to get the documents, it becomes a real hurdle for them to figure out how to get to the Department of Transportation if they don't have a car. And one of the things that we're neglecting is that there is no evidence, and I mean no evidence, of any material voter impersonation, the type of fraud that that voter ID will prevent. And study after study after study has looked at this. And there are occasionally people who simply impersonate someone else, but we're talking on the order of maybe one or two people per year or per election. In Texas in 2012, there were millions of votes cast, and there turned out to be maybe four credible claims of voter impersonation. And virtually every case, it's either an allegation that is not supported, there's another explanation. It is not uncommon when you have populations of millions for elderly people to vote absentee and then die before the election. And then if you looked at the vital records, you would see that on election day looks like someone who died cast a ballot. There is simply no evidence of any material levels of voter fraud that would justify this kind of law.
Given what you just said, are the burdens greater, do you think, in Wisconsin to getting a photo ID in rural or urban areas?
Well, it depends. I mean, in terms of distance.
Separate issues?
The separate issues, because in
Milwaukee has more DMV offices, but.
But there are more people who are poor. There are more people who may have trouble assembling the underlying documents, whereas in rural areas, there is going to be poverty. I mean, it's not true that 100% of poverty is concentrated in cities. But there, it's an issue of distance and access. But again, come back to this issue, is that there are all these hurdles that people have to go through, and it accomplishes nothing.
Well, let's talk about the messaging. Number one, people without a photo ID have to get the word that you have to have one to vote on November 4. Number two, you have to be told that it's free, but here's the process. Whose job is it to relay those separate messages?
Well, I mean, you would.
Is it the local clerks? Is it GAB? Or is it the political parties?
And it hasn't been established. So Wisconsin is highly unusual in that election administration in this state is highly decentralized. It's hyper-decentralized. We have about 20% of all election officials in the country, because every municipality has its own election clerk. So we're roughly 1,900 election clerks out of about 9,000 nationwide.
Wow.
And we also have the GAB, but the issue of whose responsibility is it to inform people, one would think that that's the state's responsibility. They passed this law, they have an obligation to inform people, but the efforts to get the message out have been relatively inconsistent, in part because the law has been enjoined and
held in abeyance,
here,
suddenly back on.
Right, and again, that there are groups, parties, local clerks, they don't have the budget. So we had the Madison city clerk indicating that in order to hire additional poll workers and to check absentee ballots and to communicate, one of the things we haven't talked about is that at the time the appeals court lifted the injunction, there had been over 10,000 absentee ballots that had already been sent out with no notification.
Let's get into that, but let's get into that in this way. Going to GAB stats, in the 2012 recall and in the 2010 election for governor, one out of every 10 votes in Wisconsin were absentee. But in the 2012 presidential election, that doubled. One in five votes were absentee. So now talk about the unique issues posed by having a photo ID requirement absentee ballots. Go ahead.
Well, the issue of the increase in absentee voting is actually not exceptional. That's happening everywhere.
Right.
That the nationwide, I think we are now approaching almost 30% of votes in the presidential election year are cast either absentee or by mail, because Washington and Oregon now conduct their elections entirely by mail. So that's not really the issue. One of the issues is that, unlike other states, in Georgia, if you vote absentee, you don't have to show an ID. In Wisconsin, you have to provide evidence, either perhaps by photocopying your ID and mailing it in. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't that that sort of relief valve for people having an opportunity to vote absentee. But the issue here is that there were thousands of absentee ballots that had already been sent out to people because people request them in advance. And they went out, and the instructions did not include any information about the need to include a photo ID. And there are, I don't know exactly how many have been returned, but many of them have been returned. And so now the clerks are in a situation where they need to contact people and communicate that you need to send this in. If they don't get it, if someone doesn't get the message, they don't get the message, they don't send the voter ID.
They're traveling, they don't get it.
Their ballot will not be counted.
Or you have the scenario of someone who has already voted by absentee being told to submit documents, and they don't read it very well, and they say, well, here's a copy of my birth certificate. That's not acceptable, is it?
No.
It isn't.
Because it doesn't establish your identity, because it doesn't have your picture on it.
But absentee ballots and voters who show up on November 4 and try to vote and they don't have the right documents, they cast what's called a provisional ballot, correct? That means you vote on a Tuesday, you have to come in and prove your identity by 5 p.m. on Friday.
I think that's correct.
Do you see a wholesale increase in the number of provisional ballots being cast on November 4 as a result of the photo ID law?
I do. And provisional ballots is not something that is at all common in Wisconsin, because provisional balloting was created with the Help America Vote Act to allow people who show up and believe that they are registered accurately and who aren't for one reason or another, that they can still cast a ballot as opposed to simply being turned away. And then they have a period of time to establish their identity and have their ballot counted. In Wisconsin, that almost never happens, because if you show up on election day and you believe you're registered and you're not, we have election day registration. You can register on the spot. And
if
so,
you have the right documents.
If you have the right documents. Now, the documents for registration are a little different than establishing to vote. You need something with your address on it. But people either register on the spot, mm-hmm. and if they can't, they don't vote. Mm-hmm. And so there are states like Florida and Ohio where you have thousands of people, tens of thousands, casting provisional ballots, many of which are not counted. In Wisconsin, it's on the order of tens, maybe 100.
Wow.
Just trivial numbers. My guess is that we are likely to see that number jump into the many thousands.
We have also seen an increase in election observers who have look over the shoulder now. They can stand within 3 feet of your poll workers. Do you see more challenges by these election observers who are increasingly being fielded by both parties?
It's certainly possible.
As a result of the photo ID.
It's certainly possible, because now there's an additional thing for these election observers to observe, and it's entirely possible that you may see some of these observers objecting to an ID, because the picture has to be a representation, the name has to substantially conform, but there's some discretion that the individual poll workers can exercise. As they go about, at a minimum, we're likely to see the process take a little bit longer.
And so it'll take longer, and we're looking at an election with, based on the stats, between 2.1, 2.3, maybe even 2.5 million voters. 2.5 was the number cast in the recall election. Do you think some voters will be too intimidated by all these new rules and, oh my gosh, I have to show a photo ID and there's an election observer, there's a D observer there and an R observer, and not vote again?
Well, it's possible. One of the things that I'm more concerned about is the effect on students, because
They're handing out student IDs.
Well, but
on
it's difficult, because if students, as long as they meet the legal requirements to vote. They've been in the state for the required number of days. They've established residence. They can register and vote. But you don't need a Wisconsin driver's license to register, and up until now you didn't need one in order to vote. So if I'm a college student and I have a Wisconsin driver's license, it's not a big deal. If I'm from Minnesota or another state, I have the photo, I have my college ID,
yes.
I can't show up with my Minnesota driver's license or my Illinois driver's license and vote. I have to go through an additional hurdle, which in the University of Wisconsin, the IDs that students use now do not conform because they don't have an expiration date and they don't have a signature. The university is providing them,
yep.
But if I'm a student with all the demands on my time, I may well decide it's not worth it, and I'll just either not vote, or maybe I'll vote at home, make that
decision.
Or
I'll show up on election day with the wrong documents.
Well, and I believe that you need to show, if you show up with your student ID, you also have to have proof of enrollment, which is another set of documents. And so my guess is that you will see noticeable changes in turnout in heavily student wards. And again, we get back to the issue is that there is zero evidence of any fraud that would justify these kinds of laws. And it's almost we're in a different reality, because people who think photo ID is necessary, they're absolutely convinced that voter fraud is rampant, and that that there are thousands of people who show up and vote for other people and vote, and there's just no evidence that happens.
But Kevin Kennedy of the GAB sat in that chair on Friday and said that 90% of Wisconsin voters have an acceptable form of photo ID. So here's my question for you. What advice would you give the numbers of the 331,000 or the other 10%, according to Kevin Kennedy, in terms of getting a photo ID between now and November 4th?
Well, those two numbers are the same.
Okay.
The 10% is roughly 300,000 rounding error. The only option at this point is to either begin the process of getting the necessary documents and
should they call their local clerk? Should they go to the GAB website? Should they?
I would think that
DOT?
The issue would be to look at the Department of Transportation website,
yeah.
or to try to get information about what steps they need to go to.
Okay, we're almost out of time. But one thing that intrigues me is this: in the 2010 election for governor, 2.1 million voters voted for. In the recall election, 2.5 million voted. I'm curious, what percent of the voters in the recall election, Scott Walker kept his job with 1.335 million votes. What percentage do you think are voters who said, I'm going to vote for Walker solely because I don't believe in the recall process?
There's no way to tell.
I know, but do you think it's 1%, 2%, 3%, or you're not?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to speculate because the answer is the number is between 1 and some number greater than 1.
I understand.
And whether it's 10,000 or 5,000, I just don't know.
But where do you think those voters are today?
Well, if they have an ID, I mean, I think the real difficulty will be if this is likely to be a close election, maybe not razor thin, but I would be surprised if the winner gets more than 52% of the vote. We actually may be on a more of a knife edge, and it's possible that the number of provisional ballots or the margin of victory for the winner is close to the number of people who might not be able to vote. So, you know, if we're looking at a number of a margin of victory that's less than 300,000,
yes,
or close to the number of provisional ballots, boy, that would not be a good situation.
Well, and potentially our version of hanging chads, Florida in 2000.
Okay, so here's the nightmare scenario, that it is a razor-thin election, and we're talking razor-thin, decided by a few thousand votes, which is unlikely, but it's possible. The number of absentee ballots that were returned, that were sent out before the injunction was lifted, who were returned with no ID and therefore not counted, is greater than the margin of victory. In that case, we probably have litigation.
Okay, court. Well, one final question. Of all the things we talk about, what most fascinates you about this election cycle in Wisconsin politics?
Well, what is most interesting to me is how polarized the state is. 20 years ago, when Tommy Thompson was running, he was winning elections with 55, 60, 63% of the vote. And now we've reached a point where in two successive elections, 2010 and 2012, we elected one of the most conservative senators, Ron Johnson,
yes,
and one of the most liberal senators, Tammy Baldwin. And so for what's fascinating is for so much passion and division, we still remain on that knife edge.
So what thesis have you ordered some of your grad students to work on in this election cycle? Any of them?
Well, we're interested in the number. One of the things that we will be looking at after the election is that clerks fill out what are called incident reports. Each precinct has one of, each ward has one of things where the clerks will record, or poll workers, how many provisional ballots, how many challenges, and we've collected data going back a few election cycles, partial, but I think it would be interesting to see what changes in 2014 with these new requirements.
Fascinating. Ken Mayer, Political Science Department at UW-Madison, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.